This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this week of the after show. We made some upgrades in between. We have a podcast desk now, so we're officially taking memorabilia for the desk to make it onto the video version of this show. What if you could only have one item on this desk that you think would represent the podcast most accurately? Oh, it's a tough one. What would you get? I know what I'd get, but anyway, you go first.
Probably say like a really good mug with something good on it. Something okay. That like
what kind of mug?
Coffee mug, obviously.
Yeah.
Like a good coffee mug.
Big one? We'll like American one?
Yeah. American style, getting huge. Heaps and heaps of use out of it. Lasts like a 2-hour podcast.
Yeah.
Still warm at the bottom. You can get funny ones, or maybe like some memories on it would be good.
Yeah. You know what I would get? I would get a little like figurine Jeep Grand Cherokee, because that was the car that we drove for our first US America trip. The one that you rammed into the back of someone else, that you cut off the cop cars with, and we ended up in a high-speed chase with a cop yelling at us out the windscreen. And what else did we do in that? Oh, yeah, and I remember when it stopped working at a light. You went to drive, and it just like wouldn't turn on.
Oh, yeah.
That was crazy.
It just broke.
That was crazy. You drove that whole trip, right? I didn't drive once.
You drove once.
I drove once.
You drove once on the way back from, it was like really late. We'd done 3 podcasts. I think we did the
one. Because I wasn't 25, podcast. Right?
You weren't 25.
Yeah. And you would just turn 25.
Yeah. You still put one scratch in the car.
And me? Oh, yeah. I hit the side rail.
it's because whenever you switch from left to the right, you always stick too far to the right.
Yeah. Like, and that's naturally. Not side of the road. That's the side you're sitting on in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we sit in the...
We sit on the left?
Left-hand side. No, right-hand
right,
side.
Right. We sit on the right, but we sit in the left lane. Yeah. So you're close to the middle.
Yeah.
Whereas in the States, you sit on the left and you're in the right.
Yes.
So anyway.
Yeah.
But it was a good, like, you get such good rental cars in America.
Yeah.
Compared to Australia.
Well, I don't know if that was a great car. It looks great on the outside.
Yeah, but you,
it almost
you don't remember how
life.
Much we paid.
How much did we pay?
We were paying fuck all for that car.
Really?
Yeah. We went for like the cheapest car. We got a good, like, wasn't the cheapest car, but we went for like not an expensive
cars
car.
Cars are a lot
in America, cheaper. You get like good cars at rent-a-cars.
What looks like a fancy, nice car in America pales in comparison to what you can get here. And then what you can get here pales in comparison to like Singapore, for example. It's just all based on import duties and taxes and that sort of stuff. Like, to give you an example, I know that to get... Because we got the luxury car tax here.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what it is. I think it's like 40%.
It's very high.
Extra over like $80,000, which isn't that much.
The price nearly doubles.
Yeah. But yeah, when you see like certain cars in America, like people see, you know, call it one of their mates, right? It's got like a Mercedes or something. It's basically half the price over there. If not less. And the finance deals that you can get in America as well, they're basically given away for free.
Yeah, there's like a scam, kind of scam thing that goes on, which is a Harley Davidson is like double the price here as it is in the States.
Okay.
But you can't just bring a Harley Davidson over here. Obviously, you could just sell it.
Yeah.
Secondhand, make good money. But I think if you are living in America and you ride the Harley Davidson for like 18 months, it's like a personal use Harley Davidson. Then you can bring it over. So these guys go over, they have like 4 personal use Harley Davidsons because they're pretty expensive bikes.
Yeah, yeah.
And they bring it over here, sell it. You know, a year's use, they still make like 40, 50 grand on the Harley Davidson.
That's crazy.
Buying new from the States.
That's crazy. Well, the thing is about, you know, bringing over these nice cars here as well. It's like, we actually have some of the worst roads in the world in Australia.
So, you need nice cars to make up for it.
No. So, you don't want to bring nice cars on our roads. Like, if you go to...
You need a car with good steering and handling too.
Like, I don't know if you've been to... have you been to Germany?
Yeah, I've driven in Germany.
Yeah, on the Autobahn?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like amazing, right? The road's really high quality.
I still remember, I was driving a pretty good Volkswagen car.
Yeah.
Same thing over there. You get like, good cars for your rent a car. And I was like, I'm not going over 130 kilometers. And I'm with this German guy. He's like, come on, we are never going to get there. Like, my dad goes 200 when we drive to Germany.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, I'm going 130. It's the fastest I've ever gone in my life. It's fast enough.
Yeah.
People are flying past me. But the road's such good quality. I remember it was like half an hour later. All of a sudden, he's like, oh, man, you're going good now. And I look, I'm going like 180.
Yeah, right.
And I like freaked.
Yeah, yeah, because
you don't even notice
everyone.
Everyone's going fast, and the road is like impeccable quality. And I guess I was, you know, in a pretty decent car. Yeah. And yeah, you're like going so fast compared to what you're used to in Australia, and you just don't even feel like it.
We don't really have long stretches of high quality road like they do that you can drive fast on.
No,
you know,
and like, they've got, I think, different government.
Yeah,
we could definitely drive faster here.
I wonder if they have more. Maybe Connor can look it up. I wonder if Germany has more. Like Europe has more car accidents than us because Autobahn's like has a no speed limit, right? If they have more car accidents, then what?
I think it has a limit, but it's maybe just very, very high.
Yeah.
People go very far. Like people, I don't know if the limit was 180, but people, I was going 180, people flying past me.
Because speed doesn't necessarily, I mean, obviously speeding causes accidents, yeah. Right? That's pretty obvious, but doesn't cause nearly as many accidents as like being tired does, mm. Right? And if you speed really fast when you're tired, it wakes you up because of adrenaline. So maybe it offsets it.
Well, I still remember that. I had that theory once.
What has it got? 1.6 deaths per billion travel kilometers compared favorably with the 4.6 rate on urban streets. And yeah, so it's less. So even though you're speeding way faster, you're not necessarily dying more. I mean, that's from...
Germany's autobahns are really the safest highways in the world.
Wow.
Didn't feel that safe.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
It is crazy. When you're going, I remember I was going that speed.
Could be German propaganda. We are safe.
Just pushing dead people out of the way. Now, I remember going from that speed back down to 100 and just feeling like, oh, there's no point driving.
Yeah, it's crawl.
We're going nowhere.
Yeah, it's
and
crawl.
It makes a difference because, you know, it literally allowing people to drive faster, which I think they could definitely do in Australia, it actually brings the places closer together. Because you always think about somewhere, like how long it's taking me to get. You don't think, how far is Queensland? You think, how long does it take me?
Yeah.
And they literally allow you to drive double the speed. So you're like, oh, it's 8 hours away? You're like, no, it's 4 hours away.
Mm.
You know, I think it actually totally changes people's perspective there. And like, distance which places they can visit.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, oh, yeah, it's like a few hours away.
Yeah.
Instead of 6 hours.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. I don't want to get into a conversation about whether speeding is right or wrong, but I feel like some of the speeds that, if you're constantly on your brake, at like certain stretches of road, the road's probably...
No, Australia's too slow.
It's too slow.
There used to be in the Northern Territory, you could go out and people would take like fancy cars up there and stuff and there was no speed limit.
Oh, really?
Right? Yeah, there was no speed. We had it for a long time. And then they brought in a speed limit and they brought in 110.
110 is so slow.
It's so slow.
110
but they went
like...
from unlimited.
Yeah.
So guys, we've got to go 200 and now it's 110. Like there is a middle ground of like, I don't know, 150 or something.
I feel like 110 isn't any safer than like 150 necessarily. I mean, I'm probably totally wrong here. They've probably got stats for days on this stuff, but on certain stretches of road,
exactly.
If your car creeps up to 140, just letting it roll.
It's the stretch on the road, exactly.
Yeah. Like, okay, yeah, 110 for smaller parts, but when there's just like hundreds of kilometers of straight road with a slight bend in it, surely you can go faster than 110.
Yeah, and that's the problem. It actually is a massive problem with the countries. And, you know, we have no good transport to get around. You can't drive fast.
Mm.
So, unless you fly, everywhere is so far away.
Mm. Yeah, it's horrible. And it, like, slows down logistics and transportation and stuff, right? Like, if you increase the overall, I guess, speed at which trucks could travel and transport goods around the country, and it improves, say, the overall speed by 10%, imagine moving every single thing in a truck 10% faster. Like, how much more our economy would grow.
And I think it's a perfect example. Like, yes, probably, you know, so definitely some more people would die if you went faster, you would assume. But I think it's way less compared to the chaos of in the cities.
Yeah.
You know, where there's, like, people, like, running around on their phone, not looking.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's chaotic.
Total chaotic, right? Yeah. I'm sure there's accidents 24/7. Whereas, yeah, on these highways, like, it's pretty sweet.
This was a fitness podcast at one point. I don't know what happened, but it just disappeared. Okay, let's bring it back to some actual physical stuff. So, big fight on the weekend. Tyson came back against Roy Jones Jr. I have this conspiracy theory that Rogan was paid a lot of money to...
Promote the fight.
Okay. One,
he did promote it a lot.
One, he had both of them on for interviews separately.
Yeah.
Two, if you go to his Instagram, on the day of the fight, he posted up like the photo of it.
Yeah.
And it was like written like an ad. It wasn't his voice.
That was one I was like, I can't believe it's today.
Yeah, like I'm so pumped to fight. And then he was like, and then he put the link. He was like Tyson.
It's a good point.
TysonTheo.com. Yeah. I reckon he was paid. Yeah, I reckon he was paid. But the thing is, I thought he was over getting paid for that sort of stuff. That's why I was a little bit disappointed. I thought the Spotify money was so big that now it didn't... If he just wanted to get them on and promote them, I think that's great. But that post really was the icing on it because he didn't have to make that post. I'm definitely put a link in it. He could have posted a photo of Mike and be like, so pumped for this fight. That's it, right? But he definitely got money to promote it. It just shows you everyone's human, eh? For any, like, the Price is Right for anyone.
Yeah.
I mean, how much money do you think you got to promote that?
How much did they make on the fight? They each get 15. I thought they each got like 15 million or something like that.
I actually don't know. Maybe it's around the number. Look it up, yeah.
But I mean, I wouldn't. He should just come out and say like I'm involved. I would almost be more excited if Joe Rogan was part of the fight in some way. You know, like yeah, just transparent with it.
Yeah, I'll tell you what was cool about it though, because it was such a mix of so many different legends and stuff. Yeah, go to that first link, Tyson vs. Jones.
No, they definitely got more than $1 million.
Yeah. No, I think maybe for the fight specifically, like, you know, you get money from the actual fight, then, yeah, Jones, $1 million. Yeah, that's just more on the fight. Go up, Connor. Go to the top again. Just wait. No, go down. Stop. Okay, guaranteed $1 million from the fight. Tyson said, be donating the money, blah, blah, blah. Oh, it doesn't really say. Yeah, but I mean, look, Tyson was promoting his business there, Tyson Sports or whatever. So, and then there was something like Weed Maps in there as well. I'm sure they both got some involvement in there. There was plenty of, you know, other promotion ways they'd make money. It's just for them to stay in the spotlight and stay relevant, right?
Well, the market now, I don't know if you've noticed, you probably follow different sports to me, but the market for ex-players has got huge.
Right.
Just like wasn't a thing 15 years ago. Like once you were an ex-player, there wasn't that many avenues. You like, you know, you tried to get into commentary and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
To make money. Whereas now these like legends stuff has got huge.
Yeah, it's
gonna
be, yeah.
Even in Australia, like you get rugby league players, they have like a legends like series, and you get players that retired 9 years ago come and play
rugby.
Play rugby league. Yeah, like Willie Mason comes out and they're like, you know, they have like a legends game and shit. Like the quality is horrific, right? These guys are like not in shape. And as soon as you watch it, you're disappointed.
Right.
It's just the build up.
Yeah.
And same thing with this, right? It's the build up, like, oh my god, I'm pumped. Then you watch and maybe this is a bit different, but with a lot of these sports, it's like, yeah, it's obviously a bit disappointing. It's similar to golf, I guess. Golf has, there's a lot of avenues, right? Like once you're sort of semi-retired in golf, but you were really good at it.
I have no idea about golf.
Isn't it like Masters Leagues or something? I think they have like more of like a...
No, I think the Masters is not... I don't think that's... No, I think it's not. The Masters is like actually the name
like
of the tournament.
A lot of oldies competitions.
No. Masters is like the best guys right. in the sport at the moment.
But yeah, it's. I think it is...
Bro, you can be really old as fuck and play golf still. You know, you don't
need it.
Yeah, you can be like 60. There's heaps of golfers that are 60 and play on the tour.
It looks like he got $10 million.
Mike Tyson did. Yeah. Roy Jones got $1 to $3 million, which that wouldn't be the only money they're taking. That would be probably just the money from the fight. But anyway, no, I actually thought that when they were walking out, I was a little bit nervous. I was like, oh, they both look a bit ginger here. Mm. Once they started moving around, I mean, yeah, they're not as fast as their old selves, but they still move. They still beat a lot of people up at their age. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're still massive guys.
They're murderers. They're still murderers.
Like he was hitting so hard.
They're still absolute murderers. I want to know like how their bodies are feeling today, like going actually hard and sparring against each other. Be interesting.
Surely Roy Jones is feeling a lot worse.
Yeah. But I think what was more interesting than the actual fight was the fight before the YouTuber, Jake Paul.
Against the basketball player.
Yeah, against Nate Robinson. Absolutely knocks him out cold. Like, puts him to sleep. You didn't see it, hey?
I saw like just the highlight.
Saw the highlight, But... The ref is responsible for that knockout. The ref stood him up and let it continue when he really, on the second knockdown, when he really shouldn't have let him stand up. Like, he had glassed over his eyes. Like, he was not with it.
And is he, I don't know, is the basketball player, he's not like a serious fighter?
No. Yeah. No, he's just same thing. He's like bored and he wants to do something. Right. And so he thought he'd go up against this YouTuber. But so Nate Robinson was a 3-time NBA dunk winner. But he's like small. He's like really short. That's what was so cool about him. Because he could jump really
high. I don't know
how well
dunking transfers to boxing.
Well, he's just like athletic, right?
Accuracy.
He's just an athletic guy. But the guy fought Jake, he was just a better boxer. Like he's just actual boxer. Nate wasn't really a boxer. And he just got fucking... He shut his lights out. Thing is, when you watch stuff like that, is you just wonder if it's worth it. Like he could lose a... You could take a lot of brain damage from a shot like that. A lot of brain damage. And also you think to yourself... Like, how deep is the hole, like, the depression that someone goes in after a knockout like that? You know, one of the most viewed events, you get knocked out by a kid, like a YouTuber. You know, this kid was wearing diapers when you were playing in the NBA, right? And now he's over here knocking you out, and he's, like, flexing on you, and he's going to talk mad shit, right? Because he's not an actual boxer, so he doesn't have, like, the sportsmanship and, like, the courtesy. He's going to get on his YouTube channel and just start talking all this mad shit. Like, that's a hard process for you to go through as a human to get humiliated to that level. Like, it's humiliation. Like, look at all the memes and shit popping up now. Like, it's out of control. Yeah, I don't know. Well, speaking of, like, the Masters, for example, when I went to a boxing fight recently, a fight night, an old like retired rugby league player, Justin Hodges, I think his name was. He like was played for Origin, Queensland, everything, was like superstar. And he comes out, he's old, he's like 40 something, late 40s. Not that old, but like really out of shape, like fat, look gross, like pale. And he's same thing. He just gets knocked out by this young guy, like out cold. And I think to himself, okay, this guy, he's no longer on TV anymore. He's a shill of himself. He's fat. He's overweight. He looks terrible. He was just embarrassed in front of a crowd and was probably on some, I mean, not everyone watched it, but that guy's got to go home now and sit in there in his living room by himself and think, what the fuck am I doing? You know, like that is, that's a guy on suicide watch right there, in my opinion. You know, that's a brutal, it's like those, it's like the kids that are these college, you know, football superstars. They're running out to stadiums packed with 120,000 people. They're the quarterback and they never make it to the NFL. You have reached the peak of your life and now you're going to go work, I don't know, chopping wood or whatever. It's fine. It's fine to chop wood, right? Well, because you didn't get any qualifications or any degrees. You skipped all your classes, so you don't have an actual degree. And no one wants like anything to do with you anymore. Cause
I think they drive vehicles.
Whatever, right? And now you're just another statistic. You're just this guy that peaked in high school, peaked in college, and you got nothing left after that. It's brutal. It is so brutal. You almost would rather not do that than like have to come down that far, fall so far. I mean, you got people, you're basically like a celebrity, right, in these college towns. Like, if you're a quarterback or you're on the starting team, like, I mean, you've been in those college towns. Like, those guys at the Gators, is it the Gators?
Yep.
Yeah, they're like famous, right?
Yeah, that's why heaps of them don't leave.
Yeah.
So we'd go out and there'd be this guy with like three rings. And I'm like, haven't you guys like not won a premiership for like 7 years? Because, or maybe like 5 years.
They wear the rings out, like just around college. Really?
Yeah, of course.
Wow.
She doesn't come off. That's how you pull girls. And then, and they're like, yeah, but like it's 7 years ago. Like, what are you still doing here?
Yeah, like, it's crazy. You know, what are they still doing there?
They still don't leave.
They don't leave. But what, they just have a job in the town and they just walk around the uni with rings on.
Yeah. And
they don't do class anymore.
No. They've finished. Or they might have some, maybe some job at the university or like, yeah, some job in the area. And just like stay there and just go out.
Oh, yeah. Sad. No, it's honestly sad. Like you can't move on from the rest of your life, right?
Or they'll, you know, like live in a town nearby and they'll drive in like every weekend.
You know, actually, I want to bring this up because I've recently started getting a bit more into the minimalist stuff. It's actually the next book I really want to read. And we'll get to books in a sec, but they actually post some really good stuff on Instagram. And I think that it's quite timely, this sort of stuff, with everything that's gone on this year, people spending too much time online. But for those who don't know The Minimalists, I think they got mostly famous for their documentary, right?
We've reviewed it on the show.
Yeah, that's how most people heard Netflix about them, right?
And they have, a massive podcast.
It's called Minimalism.
Yeah.
That was the documentary. On Instagram, they're called The Minimalists. They got 500,000 followers. And then, they got a really big podcast that they do, right? And I think they've got probably YouTube videos and stuff as well. They make awesome content. Anyway, they posted a really good caption or an Instagram post yesterday. And I'll read it off because I think it's pretty timely for people. I won't read all of it, but basically it says, what do you think of when you think of success? A trophy, award, or achievement? A specific number of followers, a certain amount of money. While there's nothing wrong with these things, a dozen championships won't increase your tranquility, 1,000 admirers won't bring you peace, $1 million won't make you happy. Craving an outcome anchors you to a future that does not exist and drags you from the peace of the present moment. If you always need more cash, more clout, more commendations, then you will never have enough and you'll continue to yearn. Yearning leads only to misery, and misery isn't success, it's failure. And then he goes on to talk about the rest of it. But anyway, I would say that if anyone needs more stuff like that in their life, these guys are like really good for it. I think they're good in terms of just, because they're so polar opposite to the message that you hear from everyone else, like bigger businesses, more money, more fame, more success or whatever. It's nice to get the other side of things, whether you like fully agree with everything they say or not, but it's just good to have that, I think, contrast to find like a good balance in your own head about like where you're heading with your life. Because it's been such a disruptive process this year, right? People are trying to figure out, it's almost like, okay, here I'm at now at this time point in my life. I can either make myself more busy and set bigger goals, or I've been going too hard and I can make myself less busy and set smaller goals and focus more on the things that matter, which some people have taken that path as well. It's almost like a 50-50 path, right? Some people are like, I'm not doing what I need to do. I need to go bigger and harder and better, which is fine. I guess that's kind of the path we chose. And then, yeah, I've heard a lot of people say the opposite, which is I'm at this point now where I feel like I've achieved enough and I've been on this wheel for a while. Probably people a little bit older, right? Mm. More twilight ends of their careers. And they're like, okay, I'm going to take a step back now and just relax and enjoy life more. So a lot of people moved out of the big smoke in all the cities. So I found it interesting. But they're pretty good as well. And they're not like... I think what's interesting when you like start learning more about this minimalist topic is it's not about removing all your possessions necessarily. Mm. That's not really what it's about. They still have like nice homes and apartments or whatever, and they do like their apartment tours so you can see it. But it's more like a mindset. It seems like that's what it is. It's a belief system. Like it's a state of mind. It's like it's not like needing things all the time. Because like yeah, I guess when some people think of minimalism, they think of the guy that lives in his van out in the woods. And that's not, these guys aren't like that at all. Like, they still have nice stuff. They still have cars and homes and families and houses with things in them and stuff. But yeah, I think it's that it's really about cutting the excess in your life, which is important. And then just trying to be at peace with like being bored and being at peace with like just having time off or just like being in nature. So it's good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, make good content. I think the best example for me when I saw it, they talk about, you know, you buy stuff, you're like happy at the start, then wears away. And I think that the phones I get is the perfect example. So I've got like my iPhone, what's this phone? iPhone 11.
Yeah, whatever.
It's like an iPhone 9 or 10. And you get a new phone, and you're always like, wow, man, this phone is sick. Like, it's, you know, better. You, like, really enjoy it. And then always within a year, you like hate the phone.
Mm.
Like, this phone just is shit. Like, how is it even possible? Like, I just have to have something better and new than the same phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it slows down or whatever. It's like some slight difference in the actual machine. But your opinion of that phone, it's unbelievable how much it changes.
Yeah, it's nuts. Yeah, it's like the all the research, like if you read Atomic Habits, they got this section where it talks about dopamine.
Yeah.
And like most of the dopamine hit that gets released is released before you ever do the activity.
Yeah,
so like when the
it's the Black Friday shopping, not when it arrives.
Yeah, it's the anticipation of doing something that's like releases as much dopamine as the actual activity itself. And then after the completion of the activity, there's always a significant drop-off in satisfaction and enjoyment. So it's almost like dopamine's, because it's a reward pathway, it's almost like tricking you into doing something which is going to eventually like let you down, right? So I always think when I'm anticipating something, like, I don't know, say you really want to buy a pair of Rec Gen shorts, right? The Black Friday sale's coming up. You got the cart ready. You're ready to buy everything. Like that excitement that you have to buy the shorts is the peak of the experience. Mm. Like that's literally... from a like research level, from a brain scan level, that is like when you're experiencing like the most amount of dopamine. Once you purchase it,
and you're looking at the model on the website, it's never going to actually look like that on you, but that's how you're imagining it at that point.
Especially you. I made that photo of you with the pants yesterday. He knows the photo. Raph's wearing these like Rec Gen pants. What's it called? What ones are they?
I think they're like joggers. They're like the joggers, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Some sort of jogger. Anyway, in the model.
Nice pants.
They're like, yeah, great pants.
Yeah.
They're in the model, they're loose. They look nice, like good fit. Raph, you wear them? It's like compression shorts.
Yeah. Well, it's always a tough one. Do I go like super loose around the waist? And reasonable or nice fitting around the waist.
Yeah, because what size is your waist?
So, well, 34? I'm a 32.
32.
And like, if I go to 34, it's like really loose. I go to 36, but it's so tight around my thighs.
Dude, so tight. So tight. I know I took a photo of you and the model and compared it. It was hilarious.
I'm on a band now because I got my brother's wedding coming up. So, I'm not doing any reps lower body over 3 reps leading up to it.
Yeah, I feel like if you just stimulate your legs, they'll explode.
Just to avoid any size.
What blows your legs up the most? What exercise?
Oh, it's anytime I have a squatting program where it's like I'm hitting tens and 15 reps.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, heavy weights.
You used to have board shorts that, like literally board shorts that are like loose board shorts, like actually designed to be baggy board shorts. There were compression shorts on you. It's actually great. The chafing you must get sometimes is ridiculous. So how do you avoid serious chafing? I get a little bit of chafing sometimes, but not as much as you.
So I need, yeah, I generally try and have 3 items of clothing in between my thighs when I'm running.
Okay.
So I need to have like...
So one's not enough. You couldn't have the compression short?
No, because
it slips down?
Like,
is that why?
Just last week, I didn't have, I only had one.
Yeah, but the two pieces of fabric rubbing next to each other.
I'm telling you, I tear through.
Oh, you tear through.
I tear through you constantly, all the time. I tear through in the like 10 minutes into the run.
10 minutes in, they tear.
And then I'll have blood 100% by the end.
That's crazy. It must be the force at which the thighs are rubbing together.
Underpants that are quite long.
Yeah.
And then like...
Compression shorts.
Yeah, compression shorts, like running
shorts. Whatever, like Nike or something.
Yeah, and then shorts.
Yes.
Yeah.
But shorts that ride shorts up
need,
high.
No, shorts that need to be long enough so it's material on material.
But you get the chafing at your groin area, right? On your adductors.
Yeah, thighs yeah, rubbing yeah. against each other, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So the I need three pieces of material, which is six layers.
So you could never wear like the marathon shorts that runners wear?
No.
No.
I'm not that person. Skinny people.
Yeah. No, but that's... Yeah, but anyway, that was... I didn't even know how we got onto that topic.
We're talking about minimalism.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, you're talking about when, you, yeah, when you're buying shorts for the first time.
Yeah, no, so the dopamine hit, right? Yes. So that dopamine hit is the peak of the experience. I think when you understand that, you also realize that if I just constantly look forward to buying the next thing or accumulating the next item, you're just going to get stuck in this vicious cycle of like disappointment and excitement and disappointment and excitement. It's like when a friend of ours said, when he goes shopping to buy his new car, and this is a guy that can, you know, buy $500,000 cars, he goes... I'm like, it's been ages. You keep talking about buying this car. He goes, because I'm in the most exciting phase of buying a car. He goes, as soon as you buy it, the excitement's over. It's gone.
And then you get the problems.
He goes, I don't even want to drive it at that point. He goes, but the shopping for it is the exciting part. So he's like, I draw that out for as long as I need to. He goes, sometimes I draw it out for years just because it's more exciting. And I thought, like, he obviously doesn't know that he's just kind of hacking the dopamine cycle, but he understands it from just experience that the dopamine cycle, the reward pathway, the good feelings that come with doing any sort of pleasurable activity happens before you actually do it, which is like kind of weird, right? People just think the pleasure is going to happen kind of after I accumulate the item. After I get the shorts and I put them on, then the dopamine is going to be released. Not really. It's still cool. It's still exciting, but it's way less. It's the build up to it that's way more exciting.
Exercise is similar, I do find. It's like, you know, we had a big workout on the weekend. You're like, someone messaged you, oh, we're going to do this workout. You're like, you know, there's some enjoyment in before. You're like, oh, it's going to be epic. Yeah, huge workout. And there's enjoyment before that. And then I still think during it, generally not enjoyable.
Mm.
You know, you're just like, oh, it's like way worse than I thought. Why was I thinking? It's actually way too hot today. You know, and you guys have a really shit time. Like, I'm fucking doing terribly. And it's actually really unenjoyable. And as soon as it finishes, enjoyable again.
Mm.
The second it's over, you're like, oh, that was awesome. Cannot wait for the next one. But there is that like bit in the middle.
Yeah.
I guess that's what's unique about exercise is you get, I do think you get enjoyment before and you get enjoyment after.
I think it's different chemicals.
Yeah.
I do. I think more serotonin is being released. Yeah. Because anyway, but... What I was thinking of on more of a broader context, back to what I was originally talking about with choosing your career path or like what you're doing with your life is, and once I was reading that quote and it was like attaching, because in business you set really tangible, really clear outcomes because you want to like hit them to know that you're making progress, which are, they're a complete necessity when it comes to running a business. And people might have this with, I don't know, running their life, you know, buy a new car or get that mortgage or move to this suburb or whatever it might be, right? Find the one. They have all these outcomes, but it stopped and made me pause and think, okay, but we have all these big goals for next year. When I get to the goals, I don't think I'll be any happier than what I am now. In fact, I could get to the goal, be happy for a moment, you know, be happy for 24 hours, 48 hours, and then move on to the next thing.
Mm.
And it's like, what you, obviously it's cliche, but you do actually want to be more present during the actual journey itself and be enjoying it. Because if you're not, then you're just being miserable for a very long time to be happy for a very short period of time. I think that's what most people make that trade-off for, right? They get in the car every morning, they drive an hour and a half in traffic, not as much anymore, drive an hour and a half back home because they're working towards X amount of money or they're working towards paying off this thing or that thing. They're not very happy. So like, segue, I was at James's like book launch, like party, like dinner party thing. They actually had like this cake. It was because he's obviously released his book, Not a Life Coach. And so they brought this cake out that looked like a stack of books, but it was a cake. Yeah. I thought it was a stack of books, but it was a stack of his book.
Perfectly designed.
It looked like three of his books stacked together. I'm like, oh, someone's put a candle in his book and just brought it out here. But it was the cake. It looked exactly like the books. Yeah. But then it just had like a joke on it. It was like not an influencer. And they just made some jokes on it. But anyway, you hang out with a guy like him. And like he's very content, like he's very happy, he doesn't need much. And this is a guy that could live a completely different life just because of, you know, the money that he has. But he just chooses to like make an environment and have people around him that's just like, he's just having a really good time. He's just having fun. And it's refreshing, I think. It's refreshing because so many other people we hang out with, which is nothing wrong with that, they're very driven, they're very ambitious as well. And I think that James has achieved a lot and been very successful, but he's also not very ambitious in some ways, like in the traditional sense of being ambitious, of like growing a massive multi-million dollar business and having all this money and cars and houses and stuff. So he's like ambitious in like a different way, ambitious in like he wants the most peace and happiness and the best people around him. I think more people could probably learn from that. It's probably why anyone that's reading his book now is really enjoying it. I assume that that's like a lot of the content in his book. Yeah.
It's a big market. I was just thinking about the cake one. I don't know if you've seen this before, but
I was stuck on the cake.
The cake market now, I don't know if it's because the science and how they do it with computers has improved, but you can get online almost any cake design now.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if you've seen it, but there was like an Instagram channel I had before. I stopped following it because I was like, I was going to buy one of these cakes. And yeah, like people, you like send in photos. It costs quite a bit of money and they will make like unbelievable designs with cakes these days. Like exactly what you said. Almost so realistic. You take a photo, you don't know if it's the cake or if it's the
book.
Thing. Yeah,
I thought it was a book.
It is a serious art.
It's legitimate.
Like, you know, people get like, I've seen like basketballs and shit and you look like you just pick that up, start dribbling.
Yeah.
And it's a cake.
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy. That's honestly crazy. But anyway, tell me about what's going on with this ice bath. You've been doing
I did it on the weekend. This is something I actually wanted to do for a while because I've heard about it. So we've obviously had Pat McEwen, the Oxygen Advantage guy on. That was why I went to it because this guy like teaches, he's like, he learned from Pat. So he trains instructors on how to become Oxygen Advantage certified. And that stuff I'm a huge believer in. We did some of that. But then we did like the Wim Hof breathing stuff, which I've actually never done. We did it once at the Art of Breath seminar, but I think I missed the beginning of it. So I never actually did it. I don't know. Have you done it before?
Wim Hof breathing?
Yeah.
What? Like, only the stuff that people have sent me to try it, but I've never like made it a practice in my life.
I've actually just never done it. Heard about it a million times. Anyway, he led us on it. It's kind of like hyperventilating, I guess. Like it's much more intense, but it's different to the Oxygen Advantage stuff. Oxygen Advantage stuff is really just like performance driven.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess this is more like health and mindset driven. You know, people were raving about it. People that had done it were raving about it. My experience with it was I felt almost nothing. And then the last round, we like you do rounds of this thing. So I was like, okay, I'm just gonna go as hard as I can.
Well, it's short breath in, hard breath out.
Yeah,
it's like a half breath in, but like a full breath out, right?
Yeah, no, I think the reverse.
Oh, the reverse. Yeah. So full breath in, half breath out.
Yeah. And we were doing like in through the nose, out through the mouth. I think Wim Hof says like pretty much any hole is fine. Just fucking just go as hard as.
Oh, okay. It doesn't have to be nose. It can be whatever.
You just go for it.
Yeah.
Like I was like feeling a bit lightheaded and stuff. I was like, oh, like nothing very much. I went as hard as I could in the last round. I was like, I think I'm not giving this enough effort.
And preface this. If Raph's going as hard as he can, he's going harder than everyone else in the room.
I tried so hard on it. And I was like, I just want to like, whatever happens here, like I'd go for it. Anyway, I was doing it and I just like, literally I like lost control, sat up and I was like dry retching on the floor.
Oh my God.
Of this guy's place.
Oh, you were lying on your back.
I was lying on my back. Yeah, everyone lies on their back for it.
You were dry reaching.
Because you go as hard as you can. And like, I just had, you don't get like a really strong like vomit reaction from something.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I got. And then this guy was like, hold me down. I was like, hey, I'm like out. He's like, no, crank it back. I was like, no, I'm not getting back into this. And
lie the fuck down.
And then I just sat up and I just sat there feeling nauseous. And that was my whole experience.
Oh my God. What a disappointment.
I didn't feel any of the positive stuff people have said on it. I did like go home. I'm still not 100% sold on it. It seems like some people do get benefits from it. But yeah. I don't think it's nearly as well done as like the Oxygen Advantage stuff we've had on the show in terms like I don't think it has that type of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Patrick was pretty critical of the Wim Hof stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm still very on the fence with it. My experience was, it was like an urge to vomit and that was it.
Yeah.
Other people say they see stuff and I think part of it is like...
They hallucinate.
Yeah. Like they see and they feel stuff. So like, they see different things, whatever, which because you're depriving yourself of oxygen. So stuff does happen.
Yeah, you're like blacking out.
Yeah, exactly. And you get like tingles. It just reminded me of in high school when we'd like
pass each other out,
hyperventilate and get each other to pass out.
Dude, I did that so much. That's so dangerous. When you think about it in hindsight, dude, we had a guy. So we used to hyperventilate. They would like you'd go down in the squat, hyperventilate, stand up really fast, and what we'd do, you'd stand against the wall, and we'd lean against you on the wall on your chest to slow your heart down, right? Bro, one time, and you're standing up. One time, we're like, oh, I don't think it's working. We let go. He was out with his eyes open, and he fell from standing all the way to the floor and smacked his head on the ground. Started having a seizure.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Started having a seizure.
Every year, like, some kid dies, right? We had one, we did that. We used to, like, hyperventilate, and then you'd hold your nose.
Yeah, yeah.
And someone hyperventilated, held his nose. Literally, the second he did it, one of the teachers opened the door.
Oh, no.
And he just fell straight through the open door.
Oh, no.
Passed out into our office. That was bad timing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was it. I mean, I just... Yeah,
did you pay for it?
Yeah, it was like a paid course. Yeah, okay. It was a group activity.
Yeah.
And they did the ice bath and stuff, which is fine. That's like an ice bath.
So you got paid to learn how to dry reach.
That's a good investment. It won't be something I'll be doing. And I think the part of it is just like, yeah, you can make you feel better in the moment, but I'm not 100% on like, hey, what are the actual long-term benefits of this?
Yeah, yeah. Look, hey, I'll tell you what. Good news is, coming into summer, I'm sure dating apps get a much more of a ramp up than winter, right? Way more people go out in summer.
Yeah. Definitely during winter when there's COVID.
Yeah. Dude, there has been a ramp up in the number of users on Fitify. I know that was probably one of the criticisms early on of the fitness dating app. But yeah, if you're obviously coming into summer and you're single, like you need to get on this app now because there's way more people.
Well, I don't know what I can't remember his target, but I believe the founder spoke to us and his target was something 100 per day.
Yeah.
It's maybe like 300
It's picking up dramatically.
Day.
Like when I first started on it and I was swiping, it would be done in like, I don't know, two or three swipes. Yeah. But now you can't finish it.
Yeah.
So it's like if you had tried the app at the start and your criticism was there's not enough people on it, definitely give it a crack because there's more people on it for sure. I've thought about it as well. If you are into health and fitness, it's such a good solution for dating because it's very hard to...
If you're very into health and fitness, someone not into health and fitness at all...
That's what I mean.
...is pretty close to off the table.
And I don't think... What I've noticed now is with more people on the app, the people that are getting on there, they're not like crazy fitness people. They're not trying to go to the CrossFit Games or anything.
No, they're just into fitness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the level that people just want that are into health and fitness. It just has to exist in your life. But you can't date someone that's like smoking cigarettes and going out every night. You know, it's like you just want an app that's basically culling those people. That's what it's doing. But anyway, if you guys want to get the Fitify app, we have a really good link. You can just click the link in the description of this episode and it'll take you to the download of the link. Okay, let's get into some listener questions.
Okay, we
have random topics today, but yeah. That's how it goes sometimes.
Okay, we got some good ones. Okay, this person asked three questions. Sorry, bro, but you're going to get culled. I'm going to go one of them. His name is Andy Scammell. Has there been many moments in your training dieting when you look back and go, yep, that's where things changed for me? Or this is where everything clicked and you no longer cared about the label a lot of people give you when you're too fitness focused or care about whether you're like going out drinking and having a big night out?
Mm. Now, that's a really good question. Actually, I like that question a lot. I will say just before we jump into this, I want to thank all the listeners that bought programs over the Black Friday weekend and the Cyber Monday weekend. We got six more. What's that? 51. Wow, that's awesome. So guys, thank you so much for everyone who invested in our programs. It means a lot. We put a lot of effort into these programs. We work really hard to give you guys like a good experience on the app and everything like that. And yeah, we've just like accumulated so much training knowledge over like, you know, a decade of doing this and thousands of clients and just experimenting with all the training methodologies ourselves. So we appreciate you guys investing in us and believing in what we have. So yeah, definitely.
It's a positive use of your Black Friday training programs.
It is. So yeah, thank you so much, guys. And anyone that's gone through some of the programs and is going through and really enjoying them, we're going to like email you and try and get some, you know, get some more feedback, more testimonials and stuff. So if you guys want to do that, we'd be very grateful. Maybe we'll send you something in return, like some shirts or a training journal or something. Okay, so in regards to that question, I feel like the best place or the first thing that jumped to my mind was the transition out of CrossFit. I feel like that was a really pivotal point for me. To be honest, when I started training and I was like 16, 17, I was getting into it. I was so skinny and so insecure. I didn't care about what anyone thought. I was just like, you know what? I'm going to get jacked. So stay the fuck out of my way. I'm going to read all. I'm sit by myself in the playground and read Men's Fitness. And just like try and get as big as possible. And then we'll see who's laughing then. And so I didn't really care at that point. And I'd bring Tupperware containers to school with tuna and rice and shit. We all did this, right? Then no one did it. Just me. But then I definitely noticed a point in my head where I was making the transition out of competitive CrossFit. And I was wrestling with it a lot in terms of it was kind of like changing your identity a little bit. I know you're not supposed to attach your identity to things that you do, but that's what it was kind of like. I was stuck in this two worlds, like, oh, will I be one? excuse me. Will I be respected on the podcast if I, you know, take away a huge portion of my athleticism? Will I lose heaps of gains? Will I lose a lot of respect there? I'm going to get some water. You keep going.
You've lost. What do you got? COVID here? okay, I'll give you mine. I would say I was pretty similar to you during high school. I think it's funny because when you're in high school, you're like, yeah, I just don't give a fuck what anyone thinks. I'm going to go for it. It's because you expect to be big within like 9 months. You're like, we'll see who's laughing in 9 months when I'm massive. What you don't realize when you're 16 is you're still not massive when you leave school. And it's actually like going to be years later.
Yep.
And there's no last laugh that you're ever going to have during your time in school.
It takes forever.
It takes so long when you're tiny in school. So that is a horrific, horrific strategy. Man, I don't really think so. I said just like one bigger difference was when I found other people's before CrossFit. But in school, there was like some people that really wanted to get into lifting. It was when I started to find other friends that were like very into lifting. It got like much more enjoyable for me.
Yeah.
Before that, I was like, I don't know if I like ever had to keep doing this because I was like working out by myself at home. It's like kind of boring.
Yeah.
But then you realize, oh no, there's other people that also really love training. Yeah. Like at the beginning, I think you think I'm the only person that wants to like train like in the morning, you know. Other people like everyone just wants like fun, right? And then you get all of these people, there's people that love training even more than you do, you know, and you can't even keep up with them. They love training so much. And there's the whole spectrum.
But just to wrap up my pivotal point transitioning out, I think it was I wrestled with it a lot in terms of, you know, because you're like an athlete, you're training a lot, you're doing a lot of stuff, you got this full-on program, supplements, diet, everything, and then when you take that away, you almost feel like a lesser version of yourself. But what you realize is no, you're just priorities have shifted and you're just making more time for other things in your life, and those other things are fulfilling you because the athletic side of things is not fulfilling you as much anymore. And I kind of see a lot of people from the era that I competed in that still can't let go of the athleticism. It's still never, because it's a hard transition to make. Even I really struggled to make that transition, and so I can empathize with people who still struggle to make that transition. But I would say is you miss out on a lot of life if you don't make the transition properly and you don't learn to train for health. And I still see people absolutely just crushing their bodies, trying to compete, working through injuries, still hanging on to the glory days. And just because they've never figured out how to just train for their health and train for longevity and enjoy themselves and pick up other areas of their life, because they feel like, yeah, then they're a bit of a failure if they start going out and drinking and partying and not taking health so seriously, because they've built so many habits around getting up early and morning routine and bed and, you know, tracking their recovery and all that stuff, which is good, but they just haven't learned to integrate it with the rest of their life. And there's just so many, there's so much in your life that you're missing out on. And look, I'm not here to say that what I'm saying right now is necessarily true for everyone. But I do know a lot of people that if they just took a bit of a step back and they just spend a bit more time with some other areas of their life, they would probably get more enjoyment out of their training overall, because it's not the only thing in their life. So it's just one other thing. And the last thing I'd say, because you said something about what people would think of you if you're like a fitness person and you're drinking and going out and that sort of stuff, or you're stopping drinking most likely. And that's like a lot of clients of ours, right? They come from this culture and this friendship groups that love going out and drinking and getting wasted and partying. And they want to make this jump into health and fitness, but they're still half in that life, half in this life. And I see it as a tricky dilemma, because they're your mates, they're your friends, right? You don't want to not hang out with them anymore. You still want to hang out with them, but you also don't want the heavy drinking, the partying, the late nights that also comes with it. So it's a tricky balance, you know, because you get what is it, ostracized? Is that the word?
If you like leave the group.
You get ostracized pretty quickly if you stop participating in what the group is known for. The group is known for, we go out, we get on the beers, we party, we stay up late. If you stop doing any one of those things, you're very quickly, you know, ostracized from the group. They kick you out. They don't want you there. So I just tell them, look, you can have both worlds, but your results will be limited. You can train and you can eat well, you know, Monday to Friday, but if you ride off Saturday, Sunday, just know that you're getting the best of both worlds, but you're also limiting the results you can get. So that's just a choice you need to make. And then really at that point, the ball's in their court. They can make their call. If they want to let go of that friendship group and those friends and move on, that's up to them, and take their health more seriously, which some people do, right? Maybe they find a girl or they start a family or whatever, and their priorities shift and they stop hanging out with those friends. That happens. Or they like just living in both worlds for a while. And then sometimes health and fitness gives way and the partying world, you know, takes over for a few months, and then the health and fitness comes back and whatever it might be. But either way, it's just, the decision is always with you. So it's up to you. You've got to decide.
And I think definitely you can. Often doesn't seem like you can at the time, but you can switch back. It happens. You often think, if I like leave them, then like I'll never be able to get back in. Or if I leave fitness, I'll like never be able to get my fitness back. You definitely can. People go through like crazy different periods.
Yeah.
You know, like 7-year stretch with a pro athlete, Then you see them 7 years later, complete opposite.
Mm.
And then they rediscover their fitness again, you know, and they come back.
Do a boxing fight.
Yeah.
No, I would say as well, like, to that point is like, yeah, I think also people fear, like, the thing that, like, it's an unfounded fear that they will be ostracized from their group. You know, they might think, oh, if I say no to the beer and I drink less drinks and I go home a little bit earlier, that they'll want to stop hanging out with me. And that might be true in some cases, but it might not be.
It might inspire the whole group.
Exactly. Maybe there's like three or four guys that are also thinking like that in the group, but they don't want to be the first one to move. And you're like, oh, boys, actually, I'm going to go because I got training in the morning. And they're like, oh, okay, sweet, bro. All good. And then you come training, you start to change your body, your attitude changes a bit, you're wearing your fucking Whoop or whatever. And the rest of your group starts going, oh, bro, like, where are you training?
Yeah.
What are you doing for food? This and that. And then you got a few people and it changes. And then the whole group kind of makes this shift. Like, all right, we're going to go out less. We're going to drink less. We're not going to stay out till 3 a.m. We'll call it at 10 or whatever, right? And so that can also happen as well.
Okay, Meg Haltera. She's curious about bunk butt wing in an overhead squat. So she thinks her form is pretty tight on squats with front squats or back squats. But with an overhead squat, she noticed she has a harder time preventing butt wing.
Mm.
Is it the same advice for overhead squats as it is for back squats?
It's similar. I mean, I think a lot of the cause of the butt wing can be to with the shoulder position in the back squat. That's why it's so difficult because you're putting your shoulder in such a extreme position to stay upright that you compensate through your lower back. Now, if you're doing an overhead squat, the shoulder's in even more of a challenging position. And I do see a lot of butt winking in overhead squats. And it's very difficult.
Yeah, it usually goes front squat, back squat, overhead squat. And the average person will wink more and more on those three exercises.
Yeah, progressive winking. So, I mean, there's a couple of things you can do. Obviously, you can limit your range of motion. But if you're doing something like CrossFit, you probably want to like go as deep as possible. You can put some weightlifting shoes on. That'll help improve your position. Or you can improve your overhead mobility. That's probably like the main thing that you can really go for. I'm not a huge fan of overhead squats, to be honest. I feel like the risk to reward ratio or the return benefit of doing an overhead squat is pretty low, to be honest. Pretty low. Yes, obviously it improves your squat. Yes, it is a movement that is measured but in CrossFit. But I'd say if you're not really doing CrossFit, it's not a movement I would be spending a lot of time on. I think it causes more harm to a lot of people than it does give them a lot of benefit.
Yeah, I think it's just a really challenging movement. It's just really tough.
It is.
You know, you need like exceptional mobility across a lot of different joints.
And have had it for a very long time.
Yeah. Particularly if you want to go deep on it as well.
Yeah.
So exactly what you said. I think for most people, limiting how low they go is much better because you've got to be in such good physical shape hitting rock bottom, you know, on your overhead squats. It sounds like, honestly, you're just not there.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a bunch more work you need to do to get there, and forcing yourself down there doesn't sound like a good idea.
No, it's not a good idea. No. But it's generally the same advice, but yeah, obviously, you got to spend a bit more time working on the overhead mobility, that sort of stuff. But yeah, realize it is a long process to improve the overhead squat.
Okay, Sam Phipps, just wondering, do you guys have any nutrition services or someone you recommend? I'm sitting around 78 kilos, and he wants to get to 82, 83, and then lean out a little bit after that.
Yeah, I mean, nutrition is made up of lots of different components. Obviously, when we talk about it on the show, you guys know, very research-focused, nutrition science-based. Who's probably some of the good nutrition interviews that we've had? I mean, we've had Mike Israetel from RP Strength. He always puts out good nutrition advice. Quinn Hennick,
yep.
Dr. Quinn Hennick, he had some good nutrition advice. I mean, we've had Mike and Adi.
From Working Against Gravity.
Working Against Gravity. Obviously, they were a sponsor of the show. Still recommend them. Yeah. They're great. It just depends. If you want a coach, if you need that accountability, it can be very helpful, like we got from WAG. Or if you just want more information to do it yourself, you can just listen to some of the interviews that we've had with different people or find the resources out there. But I guess if you're at the point where you're sort of asking this question, it sounds like you want a coach, right? It's a nutrition service. So yeah, Working Against Gravity is really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to just find a lot of these companies are going to use similar approaches, right? They're going to
use stuff that works.
Yeah, they're going to use accountability. They're going to help you with your macros, and they'll have tweaks in it. So I would just go and look for the one that is going to like vibe with your personality.
Mm.
You know, like I think WAG does it. Obviously, you're going to get in shape if they do what you say, but for everyone, it's like not their personality, right? It's an American company. It depends on what you're after.
Yeah,
you just got to find the one. Like I think RP Strength, like I think gets maybe more like hardcore people, like are more attracted to it because Mike Israetel is like cute, barely fit in this room.
Yeah.
So it attracts a different person, but I bet you'll end up with a pretty similar result.
Yeah.
You know, because they're doing the things that work, right? Because these are experts in the field, or like Dean McKillop as well, right? They obviously get people in crazy shape, but again, they've got like a different
They got like a niche of people they work for.
Yeah, they got different type of people. So I would just have a look around, see, you know, who has similar types of people to you and which personality think you'll vibe with and go with them. And if you don't get results, I reckon 90% of the time it's because you didn't follow the advice.
Yeah, of course, it's adherence.
10% of the time, it's because the advice was bad.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, Precision Nutrition. I think they get a really different person as well.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, I have no idea how many people they've got in shape, but it must be in the hundreds of thousands.
It is, yeah.
So, that's another option as well. I would just go to one, stick to one, and see it out.
Yeah. Before you get into the last question or last few questions, if you have not, you know, if you at this point, you still haven't noticed, True Protein is doing US shipping. It's incredible. It's like groundbreaking stuff, right? It's more exciting than the election. So trueprotein.com.au, you get United States shipping. The code is MINDMUSCLE10, MINDMUSCLE10, one word. And it's going to ship to you guys out in the United States. And if True has arrived and you've ordered it because you've heard it on this podcast, take a photo of your delicious bags of supplements and tag us, because I want to see how many of you in the US are now drinking True Protein.
The only True I've ever seen there is the True We Take Over.
Yeah.
So it'll be nice to see a real American having it.
Yeah.
And I'd be curious to see how they taste, because I know Americans usually go for like really sweet protein powders as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's
overly sweet.
Yeah, like really sweet. Like, I think it's hitting more the health conscious person. So I'm also curious to see how you guys enjoy it.
I think there's a growing market for that stuff. Yeah. Like, there's no, you wouldn't be many supplements in like Whole Foods, for example, that are like overly sweet. Yeah.
Okay. Jonathan Dawson. I was wondering if it's possible for me to train for several goals at the same time. For example, I want to train for power and muscle building simultaneously. Is it a bad idea, or should I focus on one system at a time?
That's a good question. So, my initial thoughts is anytime you have multiple goals, you do obviously take away focus from those goals. But in this particular case, power and hypertrophy go quite nicely together. You will always, from any sort of power training, you will develop some sort of hypertrophy. And then really from any hypertrophy training, you'll generally develop a little bit more extra power. So they kind of work complementary to each other. So in this particular case, I think, doing hypertrophy and training for power will work quite well. I even think that doing a little bit, I mean, it really depends what the main focus is, because some people are like, oh, I want to get really explosive for my sport and like put on a bit of muscle. But really, they care more about the sport. So if they were just more explosive and faster in the sport, they wouldn't actually care if they had more muscle. Or it might be the opposite. It's like, hey, I want to be more powerful because I want to get better at power cleans, but I actually just want to be jacked. So there's always one sort of main goal or whatever, so you can kind of adjust the program accordingly. But in this particular case, they don't really conflict with each other too much. So I think they work quite nicely.
Yeah, and I just keep in mind, like, programs have biases, not single goals.
Yeah.
You know, so you might be on like a program that has like, it's got a muscle building bias. But there's still some, like, maybe some strength work in there, some conditioning work in there. So you still really are often progressing along multiple different goals at once.
Yeah.
But, often it can be best if, like, a period of time, you can just choose, like, one bias.
Yeah.
So your program might bias muscle building for the first 8-12 weeks, and then it might go into a power bias after that.
Yeah.
I think that would usually work pretty well in the programs I've done. And just keeping in mind, hey, you know, you're going to get to that at a certain point. They don't have to be like full tilt both at the same time. It's not like you're going to get results full tilt anyway.
Yeah.
So you may as well just choose a bias and then move on to the next one.
Yeah. And I think your bias is a great balance, because sometimes if you're just like all in on one style of training, then you do kind of get, obviously you get like there's a diminishing return at some point, but also if you're just like just getting jacked, like it's not the healthiest thing to do. If you're just running, it's not the healthiest thing to do.
And you often try to rush it, I think.
Yeah.
You know, when you go all in on something, I've got to like get so much results the next 8 weeks. That's all I'm doing. And you rush the process.
Yeah. Some of the best results I've gotten are at the moment where I'm just like doing a little bit of everything in like a well-structured kind of laid out program throughout the week. And it's never overdoing one thing. And it's progressing slowly in other things with a slight bias towards, you know, whatever the focus might be at the moment. And so, incorporating a couple of elements of Project Body, some Project Fitness stuff, and then trying out some of the just workouts for that we're doing at Creature Fitness. It's a great balance, because you're never overdoing one thing and you stay pretty injury-free.
Well, I remember, and I think this came from the CrossFit days, was, you know how there was a period where you're like, hey, if you are good at conditioning and you struggle with strength, you just want us to cut the conditioning, right? And people took it like really far. And I always remember, I think it was Max L. Hag we had on the podcast. Obviously, it was a lot about training. He tried it with some of his athletes. He was like, okay, we're just doing like no conditioning, like full on strength bias. And he said, he was like, the results were terrible.
Mm.
It's like they got stronger, but not that much stronger than they were the other people that were doing conditioning. And he was like, they lost so much conditioning that some of them never got back to where they were. Like he basically ruined them as athletes. They never got back to the conditioning levels they had previously.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So the downside to cutting other areas of your training is immense.
Yeah.
When you do zero for an area, you really can lose quite a lot.
Yeah.
And the marginal extra benefit of focusing sometimes isn't always there.
Yeah.
You know, completely cutting it. So I would just like keep that in mind. And I've fallen into that trap as well. You think you can just like, cut something, you get crazy results. It's not really the case.
When you want crazy results with focusing on one thing, it's usually with skill acquisition. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah. Which is totally different like pathways.
Yeah, right?
Okay, last question. Corey Hyben thanks us and then asks, what's one thing you wish you knew before starting a fitness podcast?
Okay. I think this guy asked me the question as well on my personal Instagram.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. What'd I say? I said that before we started the podcast, I probably wish that I, and this is obviously hindsight, like I was trying to look for the answer to this question and in a way, nothing almost. Like that is the true answer. Obviously, I'll give an answer just so I don't just default on this question, but nothing. I think there is a kind of nice, you know, ignorance is bliss, right? I think there's something just, I guess, pure about going into something just for the purpose of just doing it. You know, that's what we were doing. We didn't have any crazy goals. We didn't know we wanted to make any amount of money or whatever, or sell programs or do whatever. We just wanted to do a podcast.
Yeah.
And like, it didn't really matter. We just kind of learned along the way. And but that learning process along the way gave us the great stories. But if someone handed us the blueprint before it, it's kind of like, I get it. It does make the process easier and faster and can get you to your goals faster if you have goals. But when you and I started it, you know, 6 years ago with no goals, nothing, just $100 and a few mics or whatever, that kind of made it cool. Like that was what was so beautiful about it and why I enjoy it so much now, because I can appreciate the times when it was just podcasting with none of this extra stuff around it. But I guess if I was to answer that question with the answer I know you want, probably the one thing I wish I'd put more time into in the beginning was social media strategy. I think that now we've done quite well with, we're doing really well with our socials, but previously to that, I just seemed didn't matter at all. So I was like, I would just podcast. I'm like, so we weren't telling anyone about it anywhere. But
it just grew from the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. But if we had had a bit more social going, some YouTube or some Instagram or whatever, one or the other, I think it would have just helped the brand overall in the beginning.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, there's different things. Like, so, if we started gyms, and I think before opening a gym, there's lots of things you want to make sure you know. And, like, you're often like, oh, I wish I knew this and this. Cause
yeah,
it's like,
answer for gyms, yeah.
Yeah, that type of thing. I think when different ventures have different, like, consequences. Some things in life, like, you need to be really prepared for. But I think podcasting is probably one of those things that you really don't need to be prepared for.
Yeah.
It's really something you can just, like, learn and go, and it might be, like, one of the best strategies to go and do that. And it's like, I don't know how much you can do before you start.
Yeah.
That's like really going to set you up.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, I think there's other things in life and you got to know which one you're getting yourself into there's stuff you want to know before it starts. And opening a gym or some fitness business is like that because you're taking on responsibilities day one, whereas a podcast is basically free, you know?
Yeah.
So if you struggle,
so many people do it.
Struggle for 2 years, doesn't matter. You know, you actually won because you got to learn a whole bunch of stuff out of it, right? Like there's benefit just in the work itself.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot more like sports. You know, how much did I wish I knew before I started playing rugby? Nothing. Just start playing.
Yeah.
Same with CrossFit.
Yeah.
You know, I used to watch like, I think I spent like the night before I started CrossFit watching CrossFit videos. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That was plenty of prep work. You know, I was ready to go.
Yeah. I would say now though, just some advice for people that are thinking about starting a podcast or have started a podcast or whatever. And we're having this discussion yesterday that the market for, I guess, kind of what we're doing in a way, like I guess personality podcasting, where you guys tune in to hear about us and a little bit about our lives and what we're doing and that sort of stuff. And the advice you give me, I think the market for that, it feels like it's shrinking dramatically with so many people going into it. It's getting harder and harder to make a name for yourself. We just got, because we were in 6 years ago, we're like one of the only podcasts out there, right? So we got fortunate in terms of timing. I think if you really want to break through and have like a personality podcast where people come for you and your opinion, is I think you do have to build yourself up through another channel first, like Instagram or like YouTube, before you make the transition over to podcasts. And that's because podcasting has no awareness platform. Like on Instagram, you can go viral.
It's got no news feed.
Yeah, on YouTube, you can go viral.
No ability to share on the platform.
Exactly. Podcasting doesn't have that. So many people start podcasts and they realize why they're not growing. It's because there's no way for people to know about it. You're not reaching anyone anyway. So my advice would be, if you want people to tune in for you and your interviews or whatever you want to talk about, is build your profile up in another avenue first, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on Instagram. Share more of your ideas, build up your following there, and then launch a podcast later. That's going to be the best way to do it. But I think because podcasting has such a low barrier to entry, and in a way, it's kind of, some people might gravitate towards it more easily than making Instagram content or YouTube content. People are like, oh, I can sit down and just talk, which is great. You're just not, no one's going to listen. That's the thing, because there's no discovery tool for podcasts. So I definitely think the market for it is shrinking more and more. And then the people that I see become successful in podcasting, no one is doing it how we used to do it. It's basically an impossible way to do it, to just start a podcast and have people just tune in and listen. The only way, I think the best way to do it now is, yeah, build yourself up to another channel, get, 10, 15, 20,000 people following you across all your channels, and then you can launch a podcast. And that way you'll get way more traction. Otherwise, you'll do it. I know people have done it for years and they're still getting a couple hundred downloads an episode, which is, that's all right. But I mean, just depends what you want to do with it, right? So anyway, more topics for another day. Okay, we're going to get into a Netflix review. We actually didn't discuss this, but I've been watching something on Netflix anyway that I can talk about. But
what have you been watching?
Before we jump into it, Hyper Ice, bro. Right now, I can't believe they're doing this. They're basically doing Black Friday till the end of the year.
Black year.
That's crazy. Absolutely absurd. And these are like amazing products.
So until the end of December.
You're saving like hundreds of dollars on this gear. So this is like the HyperVault, which is like the vibrating massage gun. And people keep asking us, oh, what's the difference between that and a Theragun? Because, the Theragun's way cheaper. Mm. And I go, exactly. It's way cheaper. So it's loud. It's so loud, the Theragun. So you can't actually use the Theragun and like watch Netflix. Because when's the time you want to like, do some massage gun? It's not the middle in your work day necessarily. It's when you're chilling out at night, watching Netflix, and you want to just like, do a flash on your calves or your shins or your biceps, your pec, whatever it might be, but you still want to watch Netflix. You can't do that when that thing is like a Gatling gun in your living room. So that's the main difference. I mean, obviously, HyperEyes have a much better app interface, and the app kind of programs and runs the tools wirelessly for you, so you don't even have to press the buttons. You just got to like follow the video instructions. So it's way better from that sort of customer experience, but the noise is a huge factor of why you would choose it over some of the other brands. And then obviously they have all the extra stuff, the Normatec boots and the Venom back, which is like the heat pack for your back, and they've got the version for your knees and your shoulders. So if you got elbows and knees that you find hard to warm up, these are great products, especially in some of the colder climates. Check them all out. We have a link to those discounts in the description of this episode, but you guys can always just go to hyperice.com or hyperice.com.au and check out all their products there.
Massage yourself.
That's it. Self-massage.
I didn't even think about...
No happy
ending. I actually never thought about the sound thing, but it's huge.
Massive.
It makes... Otherwise, you can never use it in the presence of somebody else at night.
No.
They're like, shut up.
And it's a 15, 20-minute process, right?
But it's... Exactly. It takes a long time to gun yourself. It makes like no sound. I have no idea how they do it. It is literally completely quiet.
Man, and it helped... I was getting this weird pain in like my shin the other day, and loosening up my calf, God, it helped so much. Mm. I was like, couldn't really walk. I went for way too long of a run. I just spent like a good 10, 15 minutes on this area of my calf. Pain was gone.
Yeah. Yeah, pain I used gone. To get shin splints, and now whenever I feel my calves getting tight from running... Yeah, just destroy it with the gun, and it's almost
as amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Okay, so one of the shows I watched, Top Boy, on Netflix. It's like a British. I think I've really come to the conclusion that on average, let's just cut out the tip of the spear, but on average, I think British shows are better than American shows. On average, I think they're just written better. I think they have better acting, better scripting. I think that American shows generally go for a lot more like bangs and a lot more bangs. Then they go for like, the more Jason Bourne, high impact explosions, fast things, a lot of stuff happening in a very short period of time. It's like almost overwhelming. Whereas like a lot of the British shows, a lot more like almost Scorsese style, where it's just like longer conversations, slower scenes, more dialogue, acting. I like that style more. anyway, so Top Boy is very much that. So there's like obviously lots of shows on Netflix that are about drugs and gangs and that sort of thing. And Top Boy is like, I guess, Britain's best version of that. So it's about like local Jamaican / English gangs and moving drugs. But they do it in such a way that it just feels real. Like it just feels like this is how it would actually be in real life. I really enjoyed it. They crushed it. So the story behind Top Boy was the first two seasons got released in 2011, but they were quite kind of budget. And then Drake watched the seasons and called them up and was like, "Where's the season 3?" And they're like, "Oh, we've run out of money. We're not doing it." And he's like, "No, this is Drake. Like, we're doing a season 3." So he calls all the actors back after like 8 years. They haven't done a season. And they're like, he puts all this money into it. And they made like a third season. And it's sick.
Wow.
I don't know if you... I haven't watched season 1 and 2. I started watching it. I'm like, oh, it's pretty bad. Not the acting and stuff. The acting is still good. And the scripting is still good. But the camera work and stuff is pretty cheap.
So he funded...
He funded the third one. And then it's like...
He must have really wanted to watch that series.
Dude, it's an awesome series. There's some really good acting in Top Boy. That's going to get a 4.5 out of 5.
That is next level. I want a series so bad. It's paid them to make the series.
Yeah, bro. You called them all back. So, remember that series you made? Ridiculous. Season 3. We're back on. It's really good. That's I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. Really good. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. And it's one of those series that got really good towards the end as well.
Mm.
Like it built really well. You know, everything can build really well, but then they can really fuck the ending up at the end.
Yeah. Like,
why'd they make that decision? This doesn't make sense here. They crushed it. I feel like they did it perfectly.
Nice.
Yeah. Have you got anything for us?
No. You did tell me to watch Top Boy.
You didn't watch it.
But I watched like... I did actually turn it on. I watched like 3 minutes. I was like, this is not happening.
If I prescribe any fiction to Raf, he's apparently not going to watch it.
I've got competition now at home because I can weigh it up and I can ignore Ziggy for 3 hours and watch some guy on a TV screen.
No, but you can watch it with Ziggy.
Or I can spend time with him.
He can learn about...
I'm making an effort for him not to... Like, the thing with screens and a young person is they are obsessed with screens. So, you like turn on a screen anywhere in their presence, that's all they look at. Like, their whole body is like fighting to... I guess the light maybe is just like... You know, it's like unusual.
The dopamine.
But like, that's it. You know, like everything else is off and they're just going for the screen. So, try and avoid it.
Okay. Well, you've got the recommendation from me and Raf's usual recommendation. But there it is, guys. Make sure you check out all the sponsors we mentioned today: True Protein, Hyper Ice, Fitify. And then, of course, again, thank you guys for anyone who invested in our programs. And if anyone wants to jump on board any of the programs, mymuscleproject.com/programs. You can see them all there. There's stuff for everyone, and yeah, we'll continue to push hard to the end of the year, and we'll speak to you guys very soon. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, the After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.